Thank you, Deb. I got to meet someone that I haven't seen in a while at Old Brick Garden for a walk earlier this week. It was this great combination of catching up with someone I care about and having a chance to notice the ways that spring is finally here. It had rained earlier in the day, and it was threatening to do more of that, so the air was damp, and that subtle smell of wet was all around us. There were so many birds, singing, calling, swooping. There was this lovely mixture of browns and greens. The dry tan of some of last year's thick grasses still standing. The bright green growth emerging from the moist, deep brown earth. The pale green leaves peeking out of those long, expanding buds. And flowers, whites, yellows, purples, on the ground and in the trees. We walked slowly, stopping to share the things we were noticing in between sharing the things happening in our lives. It was lovely. And there have been times in my life that I have found pure, adulterated joy in an experience like that, both in the good company and in these signs of spring. These days, I'm finding that many of my joys are shadowed just a little bit by, you know. And that, I think, is as it should be. All of this impacts us all, some of us more than others. And part of the work of being the people for whom love is at the center is to grow awareness of those impacts on others and respond to that knowing with compassion and action. Where joy lives, sorrow is never far away, and it serves us well to learn and practice holding them together. That thought brings to mind two interconnected stories for me. The first is from the Buddhist scholar and ecofeminist Joanna Macy, who teaches a counter-narrative to the hopelessness that we might experience as we notice the brokenness of the world, and as we allow ourselves to acknowledge that we're responsible for some of that brokenness, at least. She calls it the work that reconnects, and she teaches it as a spiral. I've shared this story before in a couple of different contexts. Tom, could I have the slide, please? Yeah, thank you. So here's how it goes. The spiral begins in coming from gratitude, which is the roots of this plant in the image, with an invitation to reflect on what we're grateful for. This process quiets the frantic mind. It helps to ground us. Feelings of inadequacy might fall away as we open to empathy or confidence. We become more fully present, more emotionally grounded in preparation for the next phase, which is honoring our pain for the world, the stem of this plant and its leaves. In honoring our pain for the world and daring to experience it, we learn the true meaning of compassion, to suffer with. We begin to know the immensity of our heart-mind. What had isolated in us in private anguish now opens outward, delivers us into the wider reaches of interexistence, interbeing. Honoring our pain opens us up to our love and our courage and our imagination and our sense of justice. And that helps us move into the next part of the spiral, the flowers, seeing with new eyes. We can sense how intimately and completely we are related to all that is. It becomes clear how justice, our social justice and environmental justice are intertwined. We can taste our own power to change, and we can feel the texture of our living connections with past and future generations and with our sibling species. And then with those new eyes, which aren't really new, right? They're just an awakening of something ancient we've always carried. We begin going forth like seeds on the wind, moving into actions that call each of us according to our situations, our gifts, our limitations. Working with others whenever we can, we set a target, We lay a plan, we take action steps. And so the spiral begins again with gratitude, because we do that work together. There are hard things to face in our world today. If we want to be of use, gratitude, when it's real, offers no blinders. On the contrary, in the face of devastation and tragedy, it can ground us. Especially when we're scared, gratitude can hold us steady for the work that has to be done. Life breaks through. Even seemingly frail lives can survive in harshest circumstances. Life is abundant and strong. It thrives in unusual places, even in the desert. Life shines through thresholds, even the threshold of death. It blooms and grows and changes through the stream of time. The second story is one you may have heard before. 2,000 years ago or so, in a time and place that I imagine maybe felt a little bit like today's US, though the details of how empire were operating were different. In those times, a man was killed. This is a rendition of the Easter story that my colleague, the Reverend Teresa Cooley, has told. So there they were, a ragtag group of people who had never been singled out in their lives. A fisherman, a prostitute, people who were hardly ever considered special. Suddenly, they were part of something more incredible than they could imagine. This extraordinary man had come into their lives and they followed him, not even really knowing why. Their lives now felt important. They understood things that they had never really known before. It was like a gray cloth had been pulled aside. And behind it was this brand sparkling new world full of adventure. And the adventure kept growing. The group of followers got larger and larger, and they began to be known wherever they went. Sometimes huge crowds would gather just to see him. And they would be touched by people who wanted to touch something attached to him. He did something to people, though not through a magical power from far off, but by showing them they had the magic within themselves, and everyone carried the key. But then it started to get too big. The crowds grew larger and more rowdy. The man was more and more outspoken in his criticisms of the powers that be. That wasn't much of a problem before, but now that they were so well known, people started to pay attention, and crowds kept getting bigger and bigger. One of them wanted the man to use his influence politically, but he refused. He was after something deeper, something more meaningful, something that would change people's inner lives as well as the outer circumstances. And then the worst thing happened. The political one betrayed him, turned him into the authorities, told stories about him. They couldn't imagine it, one of them who'd traveled so far with them turning on him now. But the man seemed to expect it. Things got really ugly then. They were all going to be arrested, and they had to do it. They had to pretend that they didn't know him, or else they would go down too. They felt terrible. Confused, guilty, afraid, sad, angry with him that he let things go this far. And then he was gone. Killed in the most humiliating way possible, cruelly executed with common criminals, and then his tortured body thrown into a mass grave. One of his followers bribed the government to at least get his body back, and they put it in a tomb and rolled a heavy stone across to keep out the looters. They were stunned. They didn't know what to do, where to go, who to see, so they stayed hidden away in case they were still at risk, and they could hardly look at each other for the shame and the grief. Two of them, his mother and his lover, thought that at least they could go and properly prepare his body for burial. As they walked there, they realized that they wouldn't be able to move the stone by themselves, and they thought about what they should do. But when they arrived, they realized they didn't need to worry. Someone else had rolled away the stone. But worse, the body of their beloved was gone. Where could it be? Did grave robbers take it? Did some malicious enemy take this opportunity for revenge? Or was it possible that something else far more mysterious had happened? I love this version of her Easter story, and I think in a lot of ways this is where we are right now. We're in grief for our losses. We're bewildered at where we find ourselves now, and there are new losses every day, just like that mother and that lover and those followers. We haven't yet experienced the resurrection, though there are signs of life breaking through around us. But here's the thing about resurrection, whether it's the resurrection of a man, the resurrection of the earth, the resurrection of our hope, or even just our capacity. The American theologian Frederick Buechner said, resurrection means that the worst thing is never the last thing. Whether this is the worst thing or the worst thing is, God forbid, yet to come, there will be a next thing. This is the time. As the earth begins to green in her own annual cycle of resurrection, to hold on to that idea. If the worst thing isn't the last thing, that means there's hope. Life is abundant and strong. It thrives in unusual places, even the desert. Life shines through thresholds, even the threshold of death. It blooms and grows and changes through the stream of time. Life breaks through walls we build to keep it out and escapes prisons meant to keep life in. Life breaks through, shines through the world all around us. Life breaks through in us as well, in the forms of faith, hope, love, and joy. So the hope lies within us, each of us, and all of us together. If you don't have the capacity to hope right now, I don't blame you. And Joanna Macy offers a practice to help with that. Ground in gratitude. I was so grateful to be in the company of someone I care about, experiencing the spring rebirth together. That hour gave me more capacity to let myself feel the pain for our hurting world, along with that joy, our hurting world, our hurting neighbors, our hurting selves, to hold that pain alongside the gratitude and be more steady. And that steadiness is offering me those new eyes, eyes that can perceive the harm and the beauty, the fear and the love, the brown and the green, and with it, to be open to the call to action. And I would add to Joanna Macy's work the thing that I always say, that we do this together, learning from each other, holding each other when we can, being held when we need it, working and resting and playing in turns, so the work gets done without overwhelming any one of us. And in that, there's hope. My friend and colleague Matthew McHale recently mused in a collegial social networking group, resurrection doesn't require us to predict where the rays of hope will come from. Indeed, resurrection is about the hope that comes in ways we often do not expect. But those sources of hope will come, as they always do. If or as things are broken, we will come together to fix, to repair, to build something new, perhaps even better than what came before. And so here's what I take from the intersection of those two stories. The Easter story tells us that love never dies. The Earth story tells us that life is wildly powerful and unstoppable force. Empire can damage and kill, And yet, even in empire, life breaks through. May it be so, and may we be so.